Mini-episode 1908 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1908. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with one of our favorite and longest-standing FDH Lounge dignitaries, 11-time author and Sportsology proprietor Russ Cohen. We are here to recap the 2026 Winter Olympic Hockey Tournament, as well as take a little bit of a look at the 2025-2026 NHL stretch run. And dare I say, Russ, now that we're getting into the 1900s with the mini episodes, I get a chance to try to connect them to things here. So
okay. If
we're doing 1908, I would say the final play of the Olympic Hockey Tournament, it was the Tinkers to Evers to Chance, Lorenzi to Jack Hughes, ripping it in there for the game-winning goal. That's the comparison I would make.
I like it. Yeah,
it was
great. I mean, Lorenzi and Hughes, have played together before, and you can see the familiarity there. It's terrific. They were really composed. Like, Canada had their best guys out there, and they had familiarity, too. They had some teammates out there, but like, they all were seemingly trying to win the game individually, and Werenski, made the tough play, and Hughes knows how to get open. And so it was just like Werenski took a hit to make a play. It's like the old cliche for that. I say it all the time when I'm talking about draft guys. So it was a big deal. Connor Hellebuck was incredible. I always say shots on goal are meaningless. I don't care if you're out shooting someone 33-5. Yes, are you dominating the game? Sure, on some level, but unless you're getting the puck in the net, it doesn't matter. And so that's another thing. Canada dominated for the second period and for most of the third, and it didn't matter because it didn't go in. It's the way it goes sometimes.
Yeah, and this is a thing where, again, the USA with extraordinarily strong two-way play in this game.
Yes.
And that's the thing because, two things can be true at once. Hellebuck won the game for them. And I'm outraged he was not the tournament MVP. I'm calling
it a little surprising. He was the best goalie in the tournament, but, they won gold and he was the reason. Like, you definitely could go that route.
What more could he do? But two things can be true at once. He was the most instrumental player by a long shot, as Jack Hughes correctly said. And yet he didn't do it alone. He didn't do it with a ton of offensive support, but man, just the way they were poking in there, poking at the puck in the back, checking
sticks
and the forechecking. Yeah.
Yep.
Like, they were active. And it's a thing where I was critical coming into the tournament. I looked at it because again, you're doing it with Canada in the bullseye and how you best match up to them. And again, strong two-way play, you could look at it that's the way to best match up with them. And I suppose that it would be scoreboard for anybody that completely defends the roster building that they went with. But I went into this kind of way.
Yeah, I didn't completely defend it, I'll be honest.
No Fox. Now, I know Fox got hurt, but no Fox, no Robertson, no Caulfield. Like, my thing is, why would you deliberately widen the talent gap between us and Canada? Like, that's a thing where
Mike Sullivan said, on teams you have whiskey drinkers and milk drinkers, and there were more whiskey drinkers. I mean, that's nice to say that.
Yeah.
And I like the quote, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to defend the roster, but they did win. So I'm going to move on from it.
Yeah.
But the 5-on-3, the way they defended that, the PK on that, the goaltending on that, that was the moment where I think we all looked at that game like, uh-oh, there's a problem here. 5-on-3 for a minute 30, 33, something like that, that's bad.
In my sports fandom, I go back to 2002. When the Wings, my beloved Detroit Red Wings, dropped the first two games at home inexplicably against Vancouver, and then go to Vancouver and run into a 5-on-3. And I'm sitting here, I think I was having to listen to the game on the radio because I don't know if it was on a national broadcast or whatever, but I'm listening. Right. I'm like, this is the Battle of Dunkirk right here. Like, yeah. This is it. Like, give up a goal here. And it's all done. Over. It's done. We might get boat raced. And I had the same feeling watching that today, yeah. Because that whole thing, and again, explaining to some of my friends who are more so hockey casuals, Canada can put 3 of the 5 best players in the world out there on a power right. play. And then 5-on-3? Like, oh,
what we have seen, though, is the momentum a team can gain off a penalty kill, too.
Yes. Although that was kind of a mixed bag because Canada scored not long thereafter. So it was a thing where, but that was basically seemingly kind of inevitable.
But it was on a perfect play. Like, nobody could stop that Makar shot. So, again, I still think, you know, at that point, the U.S. knew, like, we're in this game. We just have to, you know, it's a very cliche thing. And Mike Sullivan's very good at getting them to play this very safe, boring game, but they did, and it paid off.
Yeah, and Makar certainly felt like he had something to make up for after that first goal with Boldy.
There's nothing Makar can do. No offense to Kale Makar. Like, it was just an amazing play, Boldy, the way he hit the puck out of the air, his reflexes, the way he got it in. You know, I remember Boldy. Mm-hmm. I went back and looked. I had him ranked 15th in his draft year, and he went 12th. And anytime mm-hmm. you're within like 3 spots, you've done your job.
Yeah.
But the thing was, the reason he didn't go higher and the reason I didn't rank him a little higher is because I didn't know where his two-way game was going to be. It was okay. Mm-hmm. I knew he had this flashy offense. I had seen this flashy offense before in international competition too. Mm-hmm. But now it's all there. Like, he's got more strength. He's got more speed. And he has this tremendous two-way game where he can now – turn defense into offense, and you saw it.
Yeah, I mean, chipping the puck in the – I mean, just like a play right off of a frozen pond in Canada with your buddies.
Something Gordie Howe would have done back in the day.
I mean, so memorable, and I don't know if you saw during the first intermission when they put up the social media thing of the bar in, I think, Maine, where his mom works as a bartender, where they were on a watch party. It was incredible.
Oh, I didn't see that part. Maybe I was, you know.
It was incredible. Yeah, they played the watch party, seeing the goal, and it was
great.
Just amazing.
He's just a great guy, anyhow. Like, I've always been a fan. He is a strictly hockey guy. Like, he's all about business. He's not flashy. Good for him.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an incredible play. And then, again, as if Makar could be any more of a dangerous player, being on the losing end of that one there. You know, now he's all fired up. He gets that second goal. And that was a thing where, again, the way that it was going, and with all due respect to Mike Ruzioni, who was saying that, like, oh, this isn't a miracle thing. This is, yeah, okay. And this is probably the best team that the USA has ever put out there.
Yeah, but I get why he would say that. I understand. They are different eras, yeah.
But I will say, though, when you watch the second period and the third period and whatever, and it's one of these games where I didn't have a sense for what way it was going to go ultimately, because the USA did overcome a lot as far as, again, some of the whiffed shots, some of the – there was the no call on what could have been a call on the too many men on the ice, which would have been heartbreaking because it was – those
we
are the things
that – we all thought that was going to be a call. Like, it was surprising that it wasn't.
And I was relating this to one of my friends after the game. Was it not your Rangers, I think, in 79 against Montreal where that was the case? Yeah. And it's like, what a bad way to lose. Like, if the USA had lost on that one there, because, again, anytime the USA was in the penalty box, you knew that it was dire, dire danger. Notwithstanding the fact that, again, 17 for 17 on the penalty kill in the tournament, but managing to remain perfect against that Canadian power play is just the stuff of legends. But it's one of those things where you could have seen it going either way, because it could have. There were enough things like that, much like 1980, where it's like, this is a sign of its destiny. These things are going well. But then it could have also been like so many of the other games against Canada, where they just wore down the United States, and in the end, it's the superior firepower, and it's like, we did the best we could, but they just – I didn't know which way it was going to go, honestly, because you could have seen either scenario. There was the destiny scenario, which ended up playing out, but it could have just as easily have been the whole thing of like, they just ground us down in the end, and we didn't have an answer for their skill, because nobody does.
If it was last year's Connor Hellebuyck, we'd have all been like, yeah, this makes sense. He's two-time Vezina winner or whatever. But this year he was not having a good year.
Yeah.
Like, this was an off year for him, but like, he really got it back and, you know, now plays the best game of his life. I was never one that piled onto him and saying that he couldn't win big games.
No,
I was just of the belief that, hey, Jake Ottinger is really good. Let's see them both. And they just didn't want to play Jake Ottinger. So that's fine. But no, Hellebuyck was the difference in this game. I mean, they weren't going to be in this game. I mean, Canada was just outplaying them by, and Jack Hughes said it, like, Jack Hughes is right. Yeah, I was really happy for the Hughes brothers. Like, I covered them a lot through the NTDP and all, and I did put out a picture on Instagram. Like, I've taken separate pictures of them in tournaments, and so I from older times, like 3, 4, 5 years ago, I've got, you know, like an interview with Quinn Hughes from the draft where he is just the smartest guy. And
yeah,
right now the number one article on Sportsology, or number two, is an article I wrote about 5 years ago on Quinn Hughes saying that. I wrote that he's a generational talent, and I would have written it about Sidney Crosby because I felt that way, but I really don't say it very often. Now, I didn't write it about Celebrini, and he's turning into that, so maybe I should have, but I'm very careful about doing it, you know? And it's just, it's funny. Now I think the rest of the country who don't watch hockey are kind of catching up to how great Quinn Hughes is, and good for Jack Hughes, because he was always under a lot of scrutiny with injuries and such, being the first overall, a lot of hype.
Yeah.
And for a little while didn't come through, and then started to come through last 3 years or so. And even this year, freak injury, right? With that steak knife injury, that was bizarre.
Yeah.
All that's behind him, you know? And
yeah,
again, the guy, you know, has two teeth cracked in that game. I would have just like quit hockey after that. Cause like, you know, these guys are just wired different.
Yeah, it's incredible. And with Quinn Hughes, I mean, I've still got him number two in the world behind Makar at defense, but I've got
I'm not sure that's the case. Like, I think you could make an argument that it's almost neck and neck, but they do it differently.
You could.
They do it differently because I noticed in this tournament that Quinn Hughes was kind of like better laterally than he's ever been. He's always been a great skater. So now I think overall, he's a little better overall than Cale Makar. Makar is still the faster player.
Yeah.
But I think with Quinn Hughes's brain and the way he's able to move laterally, you saw how he did that in overtime a couple games ago where he scored the big overtime winner. Like, that's something where it's like, I think that's gotten better for him.
Yeah.
And there's no question he was the leader on the ice, like the general, when he was out there for any points of this game, and he was talking to the other guys. Like, he's a super smart guy. You know, that's why Vancouver made him captain when he was on Vancouver. Like, there's a reason.
Absolutely. And I mean, and the group chat in my fantasy football league, I remember I texted them after the game that, like, when that guy's in a 3-on-3 or power play situation or whatever, like, they should be playing Sweet Georgia Brown over the loudspeaker.
You might as well, yeah. I mean, you know, speaking of Sweet Georgia Brown, you may not like this, but for my last few FanDuel spots on the Locked On Flyers show, I have been picking the Cleveland Cavaliers to win the championship.
Yeah, that's a great call. And by the way, I will say, I was texting a couple people after the game, first time in 10 years that I have – and I may be on the verge of it as we're talking about it now, that I have shed sports tears watching the end of the game today. I got to go back to the Cavs winning the title in 2016. Like, that's the last time I just couldn't contain myself after a game. And I had a couple of my extras with me here. I had the old Uncle Sam hat
that I was rocking
for a good part of that. And then, of course, as I had texted you, the circa 2002, I don't even know if it's showing up here, USA first line of defense, Leach, Rafalski, Suter, and my boy Chelios. So I had to bring that out of mothballs. And that's the thing where, again, like, you know, for me, you know, 24 years of waiting is like that game in 2002 was supposed to be the one, man. Like, I was wearing the same stuff then, and like, that was supposed to be our night, and it didn't happen. And it was, you know, came close again in 2010. But it's one of those things where, again, it really is. It's in a sense miracle-esque in the sense of like how much absolute firepower Canada has. And then, like, one of the funnier things after the game is social media. A lot of Canadians whining about 3-on-3, it's not real hockey. It benefited you.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you ask me, would I rather it be 5-on-5? Of course, I would rather it be 5-on-5. Is it exciting 3-on-3? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I never want to see something weird happen. Like, because again, we've seen this in NHL games.
Yeah.
If a guy wipes out on the ice, just loses an edge, you might lose the game right there. Right. And you might lose a gold medal right there because there's no way to recover when it's 3-on-3. When it's 5-on-5, you can recover, like, because there's other teammates that can cover for you.
Yes.
That's the only reason I prefer 5-on-5. But hey, you know, both teams played it, so.
And if we run into that stretch, it would have been unfortunate if this happened in overtime, no matter who won. If we ran into that stretch like we did in the late second period, the only thing that I can explain is there must have been some wacky funster who snuck onto both benches putting grease on the handles. Because there wasn't there like three sticks on the ice?
A lot of broken sticks, Kachuk had that situation, Brady Kachuk, and there was a few of them. Yeah. It happens because, again, guys are always lifting sticks. Guys are, you know, when play was very contentious.
Yes.
Like, you know, and the level of play was super high. You kind of knew that it wasn't going to be a high-scoring game because just the way history's been with these two teams. So it was always going to be tight. You know, my wife swears it was going to be overtime the minute she sat down and watched the game. Like, if she didn't watch the game, it probably wouldn't have been overtime. That's what she was thinking.
Yeah.
She might be right.
Well, yeah, and FDH Lounge dignitary and noted Rangers fan, Joe Lindway, we were texting during the game here. The USA was still up 1-0, and he texted me, and like, I have a feeling it's going to be 2-1 in overtime one way or another. I'm like, don't speak that into reality, and then Canada scores not long thereafter.
We say that in games all the time when it's like, you know, 1-1, or you can tell another team's coming on, and it's about middle of the second period, and someone says it, we all look at them, because now we know, like, we're getting out of this game late. It might be exciting, but it's just one of those things when you cover a lot of home games that you don't want to speak that into existence.
Well, and I think Eddie Olczyk was saying on the broadcast that, like, there was a certain point at which I'd settle for an overtime. I'm like, I wouldn't, because, again, 3-on-3 was supposed to work against the USA. I mean, it's a thing where, again, with the combinations that Canada can roll out there.
Right.
Now, again, who's one of the best Americans by far at 3-on-3? Jack Hughes. Not coincidentally.
Clayton Keller, too. I was kind of interested to see if they were going to use him, but we didn't get to see it. But no, Hughes, no question. I've watched covered enough games where if it's 3-on-3, what he can do with the puck with his hands and his vision, incredible.
Sure. And again, the all tournament team, the voting that was done on that, answer this on whether or not I'm a homer for saying no Dylan Larkin on here with some of the big goals.
No, I think you're a homer. I think he had a really fine series, but I think you're a homer.
Okay. All right. I'll let you be the judge on that one there, but very proud of him for the way that he played in this series.
He was great. I mean, listen, I remember talking to Kevin Allen about this when Dylan Larkin's contract was up, but they were talking about the year before it was up.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of going back and forth between Yzerman and Larkin's camp.
Yeah.
And I understood what Yzerman was trying to do because he's trying to get the framework of a team going like the Bruins did, where he doesn't want to have somebody making so much that everybody's going to try and top him. But the thing about Larkin, and I've covered him for a long time, he always had the speed, right? And he always was going to score a certain amount of points. But I feel like he ushered in like the goal-scoring center era. And now it seems like you have to have more goal-scoring centers than playmaking centers. Like the Adam Oates types, there's not as much room for them in the league. You still can have those players, but again, it's getting harder to score goals. And so, like, you got to have guys that can really put the puck in the net. And Larkin is that. And I think that's why Yzerman eventually ponied up.
Well, I'm very fond of cross-sport analogies. So what I would say here, I've talked about recently the Detroit Pistons, that I feel like what they are, because they can't really shoot a lot of threes.
I don't know what they are. I just know 2 years ago they were the worst team in sports. Like, I don't know how they got good.
Well,
I have no idea.
They do most of it in the paint. And my thing is, like, they feel like Bo Nix is good enough to be carried to a Super Bowl with us. Like, in the NFL, if you have a quarterback who's, like, good enough, because in the NBA, you've got to be able to shoot from
distance. To be fair, Bo Nix was good enough, and then he got hurt.
Well, to go to a Super Bowl or win, the jury's still out
on that. Well, we'll never know now, so it doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, but, like, Is it a little bit of that with the centers in the NHL of like in the NBA, it's now mandatory. What centers are expected to shoot threes pretty well. Is it kind of that way now with the centers of where we don't give them a pass
centers
as much?
Have to score more. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't just be a playmaking center anymore, even though that used to be one of the hallmarks of the position besides covering the middle of the ice and playing defense. But now you do need to score a certain amount of goals. You do.
Well, I have to say, just on a personal note, I'm very excited. 2 weeks from yesterday, the Grand Rapids Griffins will be coming to town. I will be in attendance for that. My dad had managed to score some free tickets for that, which I was very happy about. Yeah, yeah. Looking forward to seeing what the future looks like. Again, do I wish that Stevie Y would pull the trigger a little bit more?
Well, you could have had Quinn Hughes. I mean,
that makes me ill.
Just saying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, again, Larkin played well. So many guys did here. What's interesting is when you look at this and when we talk about the skill level gap between Canada and the United States, if it's not Quinn Hughes that's the most skilled player for Team America, it'd probably be Austin Matthews. And he was relatively quiet throughout the tournament relative to what his immense skill level is. So that's kind of interesting. I mean, yeah, he gets the monkey off his back as a Toronto guy who's never won anything.
Right.
But how much of a part of it was he? That's kind of another question.
I thought in this game he was tremendous defensively. Tremendous.
Good defensively, yes. And he's always a great decoy. Always a great decoy.
I mean, he is his two-way game is elite now.
Yes.
He did score a couple of important goals that I remember. But, yeah, I mean, it's fair to say it's one of those things where it's hard. It's a short tournament. You never know who the star is going to be. Like, again, for St. Louis, Dalibor Dvorsky was just on fire, right?
Yeah.
And I thought, like, when I was at the World Juniors, I voted for him as one of the best players in the World Juniors. And he didn't get named on the team the same way you're complaining about guys not getting named on this. So, and look what he did in the Olympics as a young guy. So sometimes, like in these short tournaments, like I'm used to covering World Juniors and things like that, sometimes those guys, you know, don't come through. Like as an example, Travis Sanheim blanketed Tage Thompson. He couldn't do anything in this game.
Yeah.
So sometimes you get that. You get that in other leagues too, where a guy could just shut another guy down.
Yeah, and that happens. And again, you know, it's all about the primacy of matchups once you start to get into this and what a chess match it is between the coaches and the adjustments that they make. Yeah. And it was a thing where, yeah, it was just on so many levels, it was just a work of art as far as a game went. And this is a thing where I do feel like
it was tense, though. Time. Like, I've been saying this, it's overused.
Yeah.
But, like, I like easy Sunday mornings. I like stuff where I'm like, you know, yeah, Sunday's nice. I could chill a little.
Yeah.
This was tense at 8 in the morning. Like, I'm at, a 10. You know?
Yeah,
like, that's not good.
Yeah, but, I mean, I hear you on that. But how many Sunday mornings by mid to late morning are we feeling the kind of euphoria that we're feeling after a game like this? So it goes both ways. I mean, we had to suffer to get there. We had to suffer to get there and to watch it and to think, oh, this might be here we go again against Canada. It just, oh, they're so good. It had that feel that it could have gone that way. But then, like I said, there was enough here to where I know what Arruzzioni is saying, and you can't compare the skill level to whatever. And like, but
it's like the 72 Dolphins. They're never going to see it, you know, any other way but theirs too, right?
I almost feel like it may not be the same as what those college kids had to overcome in 1980. I mean, the skill level gap is not the same as what they were versus the Soviets, but it was there. It was absolutely there, and you saw it.
Oh, no, it showed. It showed up, for sure. You could see there were times that, you know, Canada was playing keep away. But, again, didn't put the puck in the net enough, so it's what happens.
Well, yeah, and, again, as far as Hellebuck versus Binnington, like I had texted my brother and my nephew, who, like most of my, you know, surrounding circle are relatively casual about hockey. And my prediction on this was if we stay out of the box, I give us probably a 9/16 chance of winning, because I definitely gave the edge in goal to Hellebuck. I really thought that we were going to see the best of him on this stage because, and again, a guy that's won Vezinas like he has, I feel like he's been disrespected a lot in the past. I agree with you a lot.
He was for like everything kind of sort of being blamed on him. I agree with you. I was never that guy to blame on him. I just didn't know if he was going to be the guy in this tournament, and he was. And so like, I'm happy for him, legitimately happy for him.
But, like, I think everybody that looked at the roster said, for as much as we talk about the overwhelming, or I don't know, overwhelming might be a bit much, but a large talent gap between Canada with their generational players versus America, the one place I always felt like the USA had an edge was in goal. And I think it extended beyond him. I agree with you about Edinger. I would have started Edinger in the previous game. Like Jeremy Swayman, I'm watching that in disgust.
Oh, no, I knew that that was a mistake.
Can we fire this guy straight into the sun?
I was so disgusted. Listen, he had a bad game. It's all in the past, right?
Yeah, it's all in the past. But it's like, I was kind of like, why isn't Edinger in there? Because here's the thing, too. God forbid you get into a situation where Hellebuck gets hurt. You have to then choose between the logical guy who should go in, Edinger, but he's cold. You haven't played him versus Swayman. That's a horrible place to be in. That's an
again, these are all hypotheticals that don't matter now.
They don't matter.
This is like, what if Beiner didn't try and, you know, spike the ball before he got in the end zone? Like,
I don't think that's quite what happened. He got stripped, but, you know, that's...
I feel like if he was protecting the ball a little more, he'd have gotten in there. I feel like he was holding the ball out, trying to be, like, fancy. That's what my memory tells me in that game, watching live. But
we could go back a season. What if the refs weren't blind and didn't realize Rich Carlos's field goal was no good? We could go back to that.
That's fair.
You know, you're the first person I've ever met outside of Cleveland who recognizes that for some reason. But, you know, this game today, there was a lot of what ifs. There's a lot of things that could have happened. And in the games previously, again, with the quarterfinals being as close as they were. And that's
the games picked up. Like they started off a little slow, and I felt like they kept picking up and things were happening and there were some surprises. And listen, the U.S. and Canada were on the brink of getting eliminated way before they faced each other. They had to overcome adversity to get there.
And I get that Sweden stepped on their own Johnson repeatedly. Yes. But it's a thing where I'm looking at this like, is it fair that the USA's got to play them in the quarters? I mean, there were four teams in this tournament that had a chance to win. You had your big two that played today. And then the next tier behind them, not super far behind in my estimation, is Sweden and Finland. And we drew one of them in the quarters. I'm like, is it fair for us just because they underachieved a little bit?
It was the harder path, but, you know, sometimes the path that's harder makes you better, makes you stronger.
We came this close to having to play Finland, too, had Slovakia not won. So that's a thing you know, could have been that too.
I mean, listen, Jacob Markstrom screwed his own program up by giving up that one goal with like 2 minutes to go because it changed all the seeding.
It did. It absolutely did.
I think if the seeding was different, Sweden would have gone further.
So, yeah, very possibly. I mean, like, well, the other thing is too, I burned a day off on Friday because I'm like, it's going to be some combination of Canada, U.S., Sweden, Finland. And I was like, it was still a thrilling hockey day.
It was a great day.
It was.
There's a day you were going to call in work sick to work. That was the day.
Well, here's the thing too, and I have a little bit of a criticism here. I don't like the way they've opened up the Olympics as far as like, you know, the 12 teams instead of the eight. Now, I realize part of it is Russia, and we can debate the geopolitics. They weren't there. That really diminished.
They'll be at the next one, though.
I think they will. It really diminished the tournament with them not being there because many of the best players in the world would have suited up for them.
Didn't watch it. He said so. I mean, I get it.
I understand that.
You may never get. I mean, look. Do I think they're going to still play like a 44-year-old Alex Ovechkin or have him behind the bench or something if Russia's in the next Olympics? Yeah, I do. But I think he felt like, you know, this could be it for me. And I understand.
I get that. But like the Czech Republic back in the day, winning it largely off of Hasek carrying them there in 98. So it's a thing like the Czech Republic, again, doesn't have a Hasek anymore. So it's like there. I understand that it's not like it was then, but like it's always a thing where like, you always remember things as being Camelot, but like taking off the day of the 0-2 quarters and sitting there all day watching that. And it's like we could have been a little closer to that, I think, if it was an 18 tournament rather than 12. We didn't get a lot of good qualifying round games because back then you had a whole bunch of great qualifying round games. And it's like, okay, Canada, Czech Republic's going to be pretty good. Sweden, Finland's going to be great. I didn't remember to get up for the start of that one, unfortunately. Yeah. But that was it, Russ.
Yeah, so I picked that one up in progress. Although you always could go, good for NBC. They always had them on their website. You could just go and watch the game in its entirety when it was over. They had them all logged there. So, you know, they did a good job with that.
They did. And by the way, too, and I'm glad you mentioned about NBC, because it needs to be said, and I know I'm biased, five-time lounge guest Kenny Albert, but again, one of the best announcers in the world, arguably the most versatile, because he does all four
big
sports. And like to see him get his flowers here in this tournament, because that's a guy where I just don't see that enough. You just don't hear enough about
him. Right, because everybody kind of looked at Doc Emrick as the gold standard. It's hard to follow that.
It is, and I think it's a thing where if you're, you know, if you do multiple things, and again, hockey's the one sport where they've got him as the number one guy. Like right. When he's doing the football at Fox, he used to be two, should still be in my biased estimation, but not on the number two team anymore.
Who is so number two for Fox?
They made it. That's a good question. I think it had been Burkhart till he got moved to one.
He's one, right?
Yeah, and that was I don't remember who it is, but they didn't restore Kenny to that. And then,
listen, I was mad when they just kind of dumped Sam Rosen. Sam Rosen used to do a good job on like that five spot.
Another lounge guest. He's awesome. Like Sam Rosen what a professional that guy is. And it's like guys like Kenny Albert that are such great professionals, a lot of times get slept on. So it's done my heart good to see the rest of the world kind of like, hey, this guy's doing great. And I'm like, look at these calls. And like, I'm a guy who's super critical of the likes of, I'm just going to say it, like a Jim Nantz. Like as far as like, make it about yourself, guy. Like, you know, like the Masters, like he's sitting up the night before. Like, what are the lines I can say? Kenny Albert makes the call, lays out, lets the crowd tell the rest of the story. It's not about him, no doubt. He knows it. Yeah, I love that.
There's a lot of versatility there with all the sports he can do. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say, like, I'm not going to compare him to Marv, right? Because that's unfair.
It's tough.
His dad. But, he kind of reminds me of like Lindsey Nelson, who used to do Met games back in the day. And Lindsey would also do college football. And I think he did, if he didn't do Olympics, he did like track and field too.
Yep.
And he was just tremendously versatile, really, really good. And that's what I think Kenny can do.
Yeah, I think Kurt Gowdy did a bunch of different.
Yeah, Gowdy, everything.
That was another guy. Yeah, and that's Kenny. He's sort of the modern day version of that. Yeah. And it was just it's so great to see him get his flowers for what the coverage was here. And again, so him and Olchek, they'll go back to covering the rest of the season here on the TNT and the Warner Media coverage here. And as we look at the rest of the season and what's coming up, I have here. As we sometimes do with FDH, start to get into the whole thing with the stretch run preview slash analysis of where we're at this point. And so that is where, in looking at this, here we go, share screen and window. And so the FDH thing that we have here, looking at this, okay, bringing this up. So it is... at this point in time, and I will blow this up just a tad, but in looking at this, again, would have expected Colorado, and this is a compilation of all of these different rankings here, would have expected Colorado perhaps to be one. They were one in the FDH power rankings, but Tampa Bay scoring very, very, very high because no type of glaring deficiency like Colorado has, 32nd in power play. That's a lot that they're going to have to overcome going into the playoffs. And
it shouldn't be a lot with the players they have, but apparently it is. Although there's precedent, remember Boston won a Stanley Cup. They beat Vancouver with a horrible power play too.
Yes, it can happen. It can, but it's one of these things where, again, as you look at it, it is a bit indicative here of it's been a strange season in the league. Like we did expect that Florida was going to take a step backwards with having some key injuries, and that's
probably they can make the playoffs. Finally. Now I'm just worried about that.
I don't think that's happening at all. No. I think that ship has sailed. So it's like
it may have. Yeah,
you would expect that would be the case, but Pittsburgh, and again, I think maybe there's been a little bit of flukiness to the run that Pittsburgh's been on this.
I'm going to say no. I watched a lot of them. I don't think so. They made some good offseason moves. They picked up good free agents. They inserted Ben Kindle, who's their number one pick from a year ago. Tremendous player. They've done a good job. The only problem now is, and again, the elephant in the room from the Olympic coverage was Sidney Crosby didn't play. And if Sidney Crosby was on the ice in that overtime, I think we all would have been worried that that game was going to be over because of what happened in 2010. Well, now the Penguins fans are probably worried about what might be happening with Sidney Crosby because they're a legitimate playoff contender. And if he misses 10 games, you know, that can knock him out of it.
Well, and the other thing too, and let's mention this as well. The biggest downside to come out of this whole thing, probably Kevin Fiala going to miss the rest of the year for Los Angeles.
Rantanen's hurt. Dallas has to, you know, deal with that.
That's so there are some things here, but I will say, and I'm predicting that you're going to agree with me that I've been vindicated here. Like when I talk about this with the Olympics and when I I know it doesn't put any money directly in the pockets of these owners and all that kind of crap that they use as a justification for keeping them out the last couple times. But like, again, you see it now. You saw it a little bit a year ago. Now, some of that had to do with the political situation with USA Canada. That was a specific kind of moment in time where the four nations face off happened.
Yeah.
But as far as, again, and it doesn't happen with you as much as it does with me, because you're friends with far more people than I am who are huge into hockey and indeed work in it, whatever. But like, again, what I'm getting from the people in my life and the interest that they took in this and everything like that, again, it's up to the NHL to capitalize on it from here on in. But everything that I've always said, which is that you're dumb if you don't put them out there for something like this, because it's the best showcase for your sport that you could ever have. I feel completely vindicated on that take today.
And even partially, I think you're partially vindicated, but I go back to Kevin Allen, who is, you know, I've had these discussions with, and he's looked at it, and there are people that are just like Olympic hockey fans.
Okay.
And they watch for the Olympics and they don't watch the NHL otherwise. Now, do I think there is going to be some crossover? Yeah, I do. I actually think, I'm going to tell you that I think there's going to be more hockey fans, and I don't know if it will be NHL or PWHL for what the women did. Okay. And so I think they're going to get the bigger gain out of this than the men's.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that's a gain that they will have for that to be the case. But, you know, again, when you look at the way that the season is materialized, like I said, I used Pittsburgh as a little bit of a surprise here. Yeah. Certainly Buffalo, the way that they've come on recently. Boston, after taking a knee last year.
Do I believe in Boston? I don't know. So far, so good. But we'll see. Jeremy Swayman's got to pick up his play. Like, he was having a tremendous season.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he laid an egg. So let's see if that affects his season with Boston. If it doesn't, then it's probably okay.
Absolutely. And look at how much the numbers love Utah, above and beyond what their place is in the standings. So Utah is a team in there. But again,
I think Utah's got a chance, depending on what they do in the deadline, which the deadline's going to come up quick, like three games into that, you know, NHL season that's back.
Right.
You're going to be at the deadline.
But when you look at the bottom of the league, I mean, I really thought, interestingly enough, you probably didn't share this thought, and that would make you right, that I thought that the Rangers could do what Boston did, which is come back after taking a knee. They've done just the opposite.
No, I thought they weren't a playoff team. I did not think they were a playoff team. I didn't like with the offseason that they had. So I didn't think they were going to do anything. I think, honestly, the most disappointing team on this list is the Jersey Devils.
I picked New Jersey to go far, yes.
Yeah, don't know what's happening with them. I think and maybe they'll pick it up. Maybe they'll go on a 15-game winning streak and surprise us. And maybe it won't surprise us because they have the talent. I think Hughes getting hurt a little bit hurt them, but also I think the goaltending wasn't as good as it could have been with Markstrom. He had a 9-goal game, if you remember.
Yeah.
That wasn't great. And so I feel like they didn't make any moves pre-deadline here that made a difference, and they didn't make any great moves last year at the deadline, and that is something that's going to hurt the GM in the future, I think.
I think you're absolutely right about that. When you look at this here and you see in the overall statistical ranking, Anaheim being 22nd, I think that's indicative perhaps of them punching above their weight for much of the first half of the season.
They got Joel Quenneville as a coach. They have good young talent. Like, I actually think that's just. I think the Kings now are kind of like the fakers in the group because now that Fiala's out, even though they have Panarin, I didn't think they were making the playoffs anyhow, and now I think they're making the playoffs even less.
Oh, interesting. Okay. But then when you look at it, it's kind of shocking to me as well here. And again, the numbers kind of bear it out. I mean, they're probably about where they belong in the statistical rankings here. But, you know, two of the mega powers in the Western Conference in recent years, Vegas and Edmonton. Like, and I realize in both cases, the commonality is very, very, very disappointing goaltending. So there's that. But is there anything beyond the goaltending that's had them kind of, you know, kind of struggling the way that they have relative to expectations?
For which team? I couldn't hear.
For Vegas and
for Vegas. And yeah, Vegas. Yeah, Vegas. Definitely, because I think they thought when they signed Carter Hart, that was going to be a big deal, and it hasn't materialized into anything. And Aiden Hill got hurt.
Yeah,
and Edmonton, it's always goaltending with Edmonton.
That's true. That's true. And again,
the tale is old as time.
Well, thinking that Tristan Jarry might be an answer, you're probably asking the wrong question. But then again, that's another thing I go back to with Pittsburgh.
No, but I think he's capable.
Right.
And he's from, you know, he played with the Oil Kings. So I think, it's something that you thought could work out.
But to go back to Pittsburgh, do you trust their goaltending? I sure as heck don't.
Yeah, the young Russian kid, who I'm forgetting his name right now, is pretty damn good. And okay. Shelov's had a, you know, when he was in the Olympics, was good.
Okay.
So, yeah. No, Shelov's, I'm sorry. He's with Pittsburgh. Sorry,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, but that's what I'm thinking with Pittsburgh. I wonder what their goaltending is going to be like.
Oh, no, I was right. Yeah. You were still talking Pittsburgh. No, Shelov's. Yeah. He loves is good, and the young Russian kid's good. So actually, I think they have enough goaltending.
I will say, and again, did I see the level of goaltending coming that there has been this year for the Red Wings? I must admit that I did not. But as far as feeling that they would at least eke into the playoffs, and it looks like they may do more than that, again, I feel vindicated on that one, Russ.
You should. I did wonder if John Gibson was running out of gas early in the season, and then he went on a roll. And I've spoken to people about this, and he has been like the best goalie in the league for a number of games now leading into the Olympic break. So
yeah,
Gibson has really made a big difference. I knew when they got him
mm-hmm.
that he could make the difference, but then he wasn't making the difference. So then it was kind of like making me wonder, had he just played too much in Anaheim? But the answer is no. And he's got it back. And he's always been a terrific goalie. So I think I believe in him now, not to the degree where they are in the standings. I think they'll be a little bit. And Lucas Raymond certainly showed people what he is made of in these Olympics. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think things bode pretty well. Patrick Kane's doing okay. I think he's doing better than I expected, considering last year I didn't think he did that well. And I think he's doing better than that. So I think you got one more good run with Patrick Kane down the stretch here, which could really help.
It definitely would help, no question about it. And I also think, too, benefiting from being in that division, because as a Wings fan looking at a potential draw in the first round, obviously you don't want to get Tampa Bay, but if it ends up, if it's Buffalo, if it's Boston, if it's Montreal, none of those teams scare me as a Wings fan.
Well, Montreal should. Montreal's fast, and if they get good goaltending, they could be scary. Cole Caulfield, Lane Hudson, I don't think I'd be wanting to match up against them. Boston, I think, is a better matchup. But again, you don't pick your matchups. You know, we could talk about this all day long. We remember when Tampa got ousted in the first round, mm-hmm. and everybody's like, what the hell happened? And now Tampa, I'm not surprised at what they're doing after seeing them come in and play like back-to-back games here, seeing how Cooper runs this team, seeing Kucherov just being one of the best players in the world. It's actually not surprising me now what Tampa's doing.
And it was funny to me because as I was going through and making predictions, like, it is hilarious. It's almost, I think, become a running joke on the show how many years, whether heading into the playoffs or preseason, I've picked Tampa and Dallas being in the finals in recent years. And I'm like, here I go again. I'm picking Tampa over Dallas.
It's like picking the Sharks to the cup. You know, one time you were wrong, or one time, rather, you were right.
Yeah.
People were right. And then every other time you're wrong.
That's true, yeah. But again, that's what's looking to be most likely to me. Now, again, all things being equal, like, how long is Rantanen going to be dealing with his issues?
Yeah, I don't know. So I would never even go with Stanley Cup picks right now because I have no idea what the injury situation is, because a lot of guys were playing banged up.
Yeah, that is true. And again, now, I will also say, too, on the whole thing about what you'd said before, like, But what you said about, you know, Crosby, he was out there like that, you know, thinking of 16 years ago. Yeah. Like, I'm looking at it like, is that hockey that's based on feelings and memories and whatever? The way they were talking about it on TV, like, it's 2026.
No, okay? I get it. But Crosby was still playing great in these Olympics, too, until he got hurt.
They almost seem to be equating it, like, if they didn't have McDavid or MacKinnon or whatever. Like,
well, I'll tell you why. Because he was their emotional leader. And there is something to be said about that. No, he is. McDavid is not the leader that Sidney Crosby is yet. Maybe someday he will be. McKinnon's close, but Crosby is their emotional leader, and you unplug that. And when you unplug that, that's a hard thing.
Now, and again, McDavid had a great tournament leading up to today. I'm already on record. I feel like the MVP is a participation trophy thing for him. I feel like it should have been Hellebuck. I don't know how Hellebuck doesn't get it. I'm sorry. I can almost defend him getting the Conn Smythe trophy last year. I kind of, but it's like at a certain point in time, you know, so again, he is not always on the biggest stage done whatever. I say that to say this. You'd much rather, if it's a choice between the two, you'd still much rather have McDavid than Crosby, would you not?
It's like the Oscars. I think we'll leave it at that.
Okay. All right. I mean, there's a lot of different criteria. There's a lot of different ways of looking at this.
No, you know what happens with the Oscars. I'm just going to leave it there.
Well, that is true. Yes. And the Oscars. Yeah. And that is something that we've covered a good amount over a period of time with FDH Lounge dignitary John Baestow. And I think we'll be on the verge of doing that again in a couple of weeks. But when it comes to breaking down,
I have not watched one Oscar nominated movie. I don't believe.
I almost never see hardly any of them. But one of the things that's the most funny is just to break down the red carpet with him.
Right.
There's just a host of absurdities there. And as he says, it's not quite like the Emmys or the MTV Video Music Awards or whatever. But you get at least a couple of them every year worth getting into. So, but for all things puck, whether it be the Olympics, whether it be the NHL, always a pleasure to get into it with you, Russ Cohen. And again, talk about this here, your most recent book about hockey and 50 greatest goals, and give that a plug, please.
Yeah. It's called Game Winners, 50 greatest goals of all time. If we had a chance to do it over again, we might include a goal from Megan Keller, but you know, that's okay. That might
be Jack Hughes.
The sequel, I mean, Jack Hughes could be in there too.
Okay. We'll see.
But anyhow, yeah, it's on sale. It's on sale at Amazon, and or people could, you know, just email me directly or tweet me or whatever, and if they want a signed copy. But we are also working, myself and Matt Blittner, same author, on a baseball book. And at some point, we'll have an announcement about that, too.
Oh, very good. Very good. I look forward to the chapter in there on Joe Charbonneau, which I'm sure will be a part of it.
So. Joe Charbonneau is in one of my books, and I will leave that. I had a momentary fascination with Joe because the fact that he shaved off a tattoo with a razor blade made him a hero in my eyes as probably like a 14-year-old. And then I remember he won Rookie of the Year. I did a book called Rookies of the, you know, Baseball's Best Rookies. So Joe had to be in there for me.
Yes. I mean, the favorite player of my extreme youth was Andre Thornton, but Joe Charbonneau for his period of time.
Andre Thornton was really good in Stratomatic. I had him in Stratomatic.
What an underrated player. Like,
he was a really good player.
Yeah. Like, outside of a hometown, you know, it just feels like he gets slept on a lot. I appreciate you saying that about Andre Thornton because I don't hear that a lot about people outside of Cleveland.
No, I remember. I remember watching him.
He was
kind of like Lee May, where he wasn't the main guy on his team a lot of times, but he could kill you.
And a very inspirational story. I remember the book coming out at the time there that, like, I think it was his wife and his daughter that were killed in an accident, and how he ended up, you know, through his faith, kind of, you know, getting through that and building a new life. And so, yeah, Andre Thornton, great player, great man. But, always great while we're using that word to get into all things hockey with you, Russ. I look forward to doing it again here. We're going to have the Stanley Cup playoffs coming up very soon. Thank you so much for making time for us on this most momentous of days. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge, mini episode 1908.